Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Return of the Unexplained. Many thanks for all of your emails. I'm getting more email than ever now, and I'm trying to reply personally to as many as I can, but believe me that I see all of your emails as they come in. Thank you for the guest suggestions, and also for your stories. If you can keep your stories as short as you can, without, you know, removing the meaning from them, that would be great and would allow me to get through everything more quickly. And thank you, as I say. If you want to get in touch with me, go to the website, designed by Adam from Creative Hotspot in Liverpool. TheUnexplained.tv is the place to go. And I'm really pleased to hear from you. And thank you for the very supportive things that you've been saying. If you want to tell me what you think about the show, how you think it can be made better, where you think we're doing it right, or not, as the case may be, I like to hear your views on shows and on guests, some of whom are more controversial than others. We've had Mark Sargent, the Flat Earth Man, in the past. Howard Storm more recently. There were some people who were not accepting of his story, some people who were very pleased to hear it. But I guess that is part of the smorgasbord that we deliver to you here at The Unexplained. It's not for me to say, you know, who I think may be right and who may be wrong. You know, after all, I may be wrong. You have to be the judge, as the great Art Bell always used to say. It is down to you to judge. And case in point is the guest on this edition of The Unexplained. Her name is Judy Carroll. She's in Brisbane, Australia. And she says that not only has she been influenced over her lifetime by ETs, but in fact, she is descended from one, or is actually an ET herself, to be more correct. So this is quite a story and quite a ride we're going to take with Judy Carroll, and we will do that in just a second. Like I say, thank you for all of your emails. Please keep them coming and let me know the kinds of guests that you want to hear. You know, you can please some of the people some of the time. You can't please all of the people all of the time. So if I do a lot of UFO podcasts, people will say, where's the cryptozoology? Where's the consciousness research? And vice versa. So we try and walk a straight path and hopefully deliver something of everything. You know, this work has been a labor of love for me over a lot of years now. When did we start this online? 2006. It's now 2018. So that's 12 long years of learning. And I've enjoyed every moment of it. And you've been with me through all of that, through all of my ups and downs. And, you know, thank you for being there for me. All right, let's get to the guest then on this edition of The Unexplained, Judy Carroll in Brisbane, Australia. Judy, thank you very much for coming on my show.
Thank you very much for having me, Howard. It's a great pleasure to be speaking to you.
Now, Judy, you have various outposts in the media. I think there's a website, isn't it? UFO Grey Info, that's one of them.
Yes, that's right. UFO Grey Info. That's Grey spelt with an E. We also have a Facebook page, The Zeta Message, and I have my own page, Judy Carroll. We also have a number of YouTube channels where I've done other interviews. The Zeta Message is one of them, and another is Zeta Guardian One. So we have several outlets for our information.
All right. Your biography says that Judy Carroll is an Australian woman who's been experiencing conscious contact with the extraterrestrial race, sometimes known as the Greys, for many years. In her series of books, she tells about these experiences and what she has learned from her ongoing encounters. So that is a pretty big claim, one way and another, to be making. And you know that this is difficult territory. Whenever I put on my show somebody who makes claims of this sort, that they have regular contact with alien beings, I get a torrent of email from people saying that person is either deluded, wrong, or mad.
Yes, that certainly is the way some people react to it.
So, why aren't you any of those things then?
Well, I hope I'm not. I try to retain a sense of humour. There's an organisation in America. I actually know the fellow who set it up. It's called the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Contact. FRWE is the acronym for it.
And this was founded by Edgar Mitchell, the Apollo astronaut, who was a guest on this show about 7 or 8 years ago and sadly, of course, no longer with us.
Yes, well, he took over as their primary patron up until his death last year. It was actually founded by a man by the name of Reynilio Hernandez. But the Free Organization has done very, very extensive surveys on this very subject, surveying, well, probably thousands and thousands of people who have had ET contact. And they're absolutely blown away at the number of people, the similarity between the experiences, not really about, it's not about culture, it's not about nationality. People right across the planet have had very, very similar experiences and reporting on similar things. They actually have an astrophysicist on their executive committee and a number of other scientists. So it is being taken very seriously now.
It is being taken seriously by some people, but you appreciate, I guess, that these are difficult claims to make and they're difficult experiences to impart because of the level of skepticism and, in some cases, cynicism about this.
Oh, yes, for sure. I totally understand that. I mean, I came into it that way because here in Australia, it's a little bit different to America. I mean, we never had things like the Roswell incident and things like that. So when I came into it many, many years ago and started remembering that I was having experiences, which I have had since early childhood, I had no idea what was actually happening to me. I thought I was deluded or something. I was quite worried about it. And finally, I got to read Whitley Strieber's book, Communion. I'm sure you're familiar with that, and
Oh,
I'm
Whitley
sure.
Strieber's been a regular guest on this show, yes.
Okay, yes. And he put himself or got his doctor to put him through a whole battery of tests to make sure that he wasn't epileptic or that he wasn't suffering from some sort of psychiatric condition or whatever. And he came out clear on all counts. And that actually gave me a little bit more confidence then to really start investigating it. And since then, I've had quite a lot of evidence from people. For example, I get up and talk at a few conferences and things, and I've had many independent people come up to me afterwards and say, "Oh, we actually saw your face change as you were speaking. You actually, your face became that of an ET." I've seen it myself looking in the mirror one night.
Hold
So.
on, you say that when you've spoken to conferences, your own face has changed.
Yes. I've had a number of people, always people who have a certain amount of clairvoyant ability, but I have had a number of people coming up in independently telling me and describing the face exactly the same.
And how would the, I mean, we have a view from the media, from movies and that kind of thing, magazines, of what a grey looks like. Does your face become like that?
Yes, it does. It does.
And what does that mean then? Does that mean that you think they've in some way, I'm thinking of a word here, assimilated you?
I actually have been a grey in a past life. I have quite strong conscious memories of my past life as a grey and of making conscious decision to be reborn down here in 1952 in Earth human form. I have memories of all this. So it's the first time I had a conscious contact with them, I was age 30, and I recognised them as family. I felt a real deep family connection with
All
them.
right, let's wind it back then before we tell the whole story, and I certainly want to get the full unexpurgated story from you, Judy. Talk to me about you. You say that you came to appreciating these experiences later on in your life, which is a very common thing, I have to say. There are a number of people who say exactly that. But what were you? What life path had you taken?
I was born into a very ordinary Australian family. My family background is actually a little bit interesting in that my dad came from England. He was born in England, but he was of South American background, Chilean. And my mum was of a Middle European background. And we actually have Romany, Gypsy blood in our family. And I actually had a great grandmother who was a professional dancer in this field and also a psychic medium. So I've obviously inherited something, down through the family line, like a sort of a shamanic ability to link into alternative dimensions.
Well, but they do say those things run in families. I mean, I've told people many times that my grandfather, my dad's dad, used to read the teacups for people in Liverpool.
Right.
So there
right.
you go, which was a thing that I don't know if they do it in Australia, but it was something they used to do over here and was said to be some kind of psychic ability. But they do say these things run in families.
They certainly do, yes. I mean, the whole shamanic thing, you know, the ability to see and to heal and to do things like that run down through the family. My father was actually a good dowser, and he actually employed it. He was working at the local post office here in Australia, and he actually used his dowsing to find water underground when they came to lay some cables. So it was very, very practical. But I was brought up that way to be very practical and grounded about the whole thing. Through my childhood, I actually went through a lot of fear because I was aware of going off somewhere, being taken off somewhere at night, and it was almost like it was a double life I was living, because I found it very hard to balance these memories with my normal childhood. It was like as if I was living two different lives. And Probably, it would have been about the age of 15, I underwent this paralysis experience that people talk about, mind awake, body asleep, I think they refer to it, when I obviously had a pretty profound encounter with the ETs. I know I did. I couldn't remember a lot of it when I woke up.
So you were saying to me, Judy, at the beginning of this, that you came to fully recognise this, unless I misheard you, later life, but yet you were having these experiences, and you say you were aware of them as a child.
Yes, I was semi-aware. It's very, very hard to put into physical, verbal speech, you know, explanation. It's like as if there's two brains in your head. People who do channeling and clairvoyance and that will understand what I'm talking about. It's like as if you have two realities running along parallel beside each other, and your day-to-day waking reality has great difficulty in, bringing the other reality through to full consciousness. It's like it's there in the back of your mind. It's something like, you know, when you wake up, you know you've had a very profound dream, and it's right on the edge of your mind, but you can't quite grasp it. You might grasp a couple of points of it, but you can't grasp the whole thing.
And my listeners will be telling me that there are some, if you'll forgive me, mental conditions that can cause people to feel that they have a sort of duality of personality.
Yes, oh yes, for sure. Well, that was why I felt very encouraged when Whitley Strieber put himself through all his battery of tests to make sure he wasn't suffering from anything like that. And the thing is now there are so many tens of thousands of people on the planet going through it. I mean, surely tens of thousands of people aren't all suffering from mental abnormalities.
And did you subject yourself to those tests after Whitley had them done?
No, I didn't. I haven't done that, no.
Are you encouraged to? Would you like to?
Not particularly, because I know that I'm a very normal, down-to-earth person. I've been told that many times over.
I don't know whether you know of Susie Hansen in New Zealand.
Yes, I do, yes.
Okay, well, Susie I've spoken to. In fact, I'm due to speak with her again. And Susie puts a very powerful case. And, you know, I like Susie. She was, a good guest here on this show.
She's brilliant.
And, she was a teacher, and somebody who had a very professional, you know, place in society, has a very successful and solid place in society. And, you know, she had experiences. So it's not that unusual. You're not alone in these things. Take me back to the childhood experiences, though. What do you believe was happening to you as a child?
Well, as I say, I was a grey in my last life, and I actually made a choice before being reborn that I was going to come back here and continue to be part of the mission that actually started happening on Earth. A lot of ETs started coming here after the detonation of the bombs that ended World War II. Once a planetary culture starts bringing in nuclear energy and developing nuclear energy, off-planet people become concerned, because this is when we become a danger to other planets.
And is that the era after World War II, which is when you would have come into the world, some years after World War II, is that when you say the aliens began to make contact with you as a child? And what did they do?
Basically, they used to take me out of my body and take me up onto the ship. I used to undergo classes up there.
And you knew, you consciously remembered this as a child, or did it take you to understand this later?
It took me quite a while to understand it. Because as a child, I couldn't get my human brain. See, the problem is Earth humans only use about 10% of their potential conscious awareness. So when we're working through a human body, our brain puts limits on what we're able to bring back consciously. We are very limited in that way. This is also tied in with the activation of DNA. We need to have more DNA activated to enable us to access.
All right. When you were taken on board ships, as you say, what was that experience like?
Well, one particular experience I remember was being taken up our street in the middle of the night by a tall, thin woman who I thought of as my grandmother. She held me by the hand, as you would with a small child, and my Earth human child's memory the next day could recall being taken to a railway station and stepping on board a train. Now, there was no railway station anywhere near our house, and it took me many years to be able to get my head around this, because I remember this as a very clear experience, being taken to board this train. And I used to often ask my family, you know, look, what happened? Where did we go that night? And they had no idea what I was talking about. And as I started to open up more to more of my off-planet consciousness, the understanding of it became much clearer that it wasn't actually a train I was taken on. I was taken on a ship. And I've heard this story from many, many other people. Of course, Susie Hansen talks about it herself.
Okay, and I asked you, what was it like, though? What was it like to be on the ship?
Well, it's so different from here. The ships, they're hard to describe. The grey ships, the ones that the Zetas operate on, are very, very, how can I say, they're clinically very pure, because people are taken up there for medical work to be done on them. So they have a rather hospital-like clinical feel about them. The living quarters on the ships, for the Greys in particular, are a series of very sort of small, narrow corridors and small rooms. All the walls and doorways are very sort of softly arched. They're like they're moulded. They don't look as if they've been made. Or manufactured.
What, so they look like they've grown or something?
Yes, they look like they've grown. They actually, a lot of the people down here who remember being up there often talk about how they feel drawn to Greek architecture, because the architecture of the Greek islands looks a little bit like on board a ship. You know, the soft white arches and the narrow alleyways, you know, after many hundreds of years of whitewashing, they become that way. Mm. Well, up on the ships, it's very similar. It's got a sort of a moulded look to it.
Yes, I can visualise exactly what you're saying here. As a child, what were you told by them that your role was? Why were they taking you?
Okay, well, that wasn't explained to me consciously until I had a very, very full-on encounter at age 30 in the middle of the day.
All right, well, we'll get to that in a moment then. As a child, were you telling your parents about this? Were you telling your family members? Were you telling teachers, people in authority? What was happening to you?
No, I wasn't. I was just terrified to go to bed at night. That was all I was aware of. I wasn't consciously aware of a lot that was going on. I was aware of being taken somewhere different so I could sort of remember what it was like, but I had no idea what it was.
In all other respects, Judy, was your childhood normal?
Yes, quite normal. In a way, it was normal in that I went to school and I had my family and we went on family outings, but it was a little bit abnormal in that I had this incredible terror. I would not go to bed on my own until I was about 11 years old. And I was always very embarrassed. I never told school friends about this. And I was very embarrassed about it until I started reading the story of other children who've been through ET contact and the terror that they experience. So, yes, my childhood was a little bit unusual there. I'm very, very aware, too, that I carefully chose my family, the family I was going to be born into, because they were very understanding. I wasn't just sort of told, you know, don't be so stupid, get into bed. You know, Mum would stay with me and they'd sort of try to reassure me. So, yes, I was a bit strange there. The other thing that I found very, very strange was just physically being in a human body. The act of having to eat and go to the bathroom and things like that felt really weird to me. It just didn't feel right.
So you think that it was a little bit like the experience that some of us have, that we think that we had a previous life. The only difference was that your previous life, you say, was not an earthly one.
Yes, that's right, yeah. And I'm certainly not the only one. There are many, many others down here who can relate to this.
Mm. And again, I don't want to constantly throw things that people send to me in emails, but there would be people, and there have been people in the past when I've heard stories like this, and every story is different, who've said that this is perhaps the brain's way of covering up something that you perhaps have a difficulty with on this earth, in this realm.
Yeah, like a traumatic childhood or something.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I was very lucky. I didn't have anything like that. I had a very, very good family, I must admit. I couldn't have done better getting the family I got.
Okay. Right. Did you feel you were special?
No, not particularly. And I know I'm not special because there are so many people on the planet going through this. There's a huge, huge number, thousands and thousands, tens of thousands.
Mm. But as a child, and as you were coming up to, you say, 15, these things were happening to you, but they weren't explaining to you what it was all about. I would imagine part of that trauma you say that you felt was exactly that. To know something is happening is one thing, and that most people can accept things that start to happen that are unusual. But if you don't know why it's happened, then you have a big problem.
No, well, the thing is this, again, this is extremely hard to explain because I'm speaking from two perspectives. I'm speaking from the off-planet perspective and I'm speaking from the human perspective. Now, from my off-planet perspective, this whole thing was planned because part of my job down here, which is what I'm doing through these interviews and through my books that I've written three books now, is to help to alleviate the fear on this planet, this fear that is blocking humanity and causing all the problems down here. Now, this is part of my job and plenty of others. I'm not saying I'm special or anything. Part of my job and many of our other people who are down here is to try to alleviate this fear. Now, my decision before coming here, my decision made as a grey, was to experience the fear through my childhood so that I would have total empathy with these people now who I'm trying to help. So there's no way that I would ever turn around and say, don't be silly, it's just your imagination. I have the empathy because I've been there, I've done that. But if I had remembered as a child, I wouldn't have suffered the fear. And the whole idea was to experience the fear, so I would know where others are coming from.
Hmm. Okay, well, that's a big mission statement then. So you say that you experienced the fear almost to help the rest of us?
Yes. So that I would understand where others are coming from. And since the publication of my first two books, The Zeta Message and Human by Day, Zeta by Night, back in 2011, I have received hundreds of emails from all over the planet. People desperate. Oh, you've helped me so much. This is happening. That's happening. I'm going through this. I'm having contact. I was so scared. You've changed my life. And this just almost brings me to tears when I receive these emails because I think, right, I'm doing my job. Fantastic. That's what I'm here for.
You use the word Zeta, as we might say here in the UK. I'm not sure which of the two, but let's stick with Zeta. You use that word. For my listener, explain what that is.
Okay, the Zeta Reticulans are an off-planet species who are part of the grey culture. They're greys is a sort of a generic term. It's a little bit like we speak about humans, but you can have humans of Earth or you can have humans from another planet. It's the same with the greys. The greys are a very, very widely distributed cultures throughout the universe, and the Zeta Reticulans are one of those cultures and one of the main ones who are interacting with Earth humans.
Right, so it's rather like people who are, people who are like me. You might find somebody who looks like me and is very similar to me in Scandinavia, maybe. It's like that with the Greys, is it? They're distributed in different places.
Yes, exactly.
They're a species.
People tend to say they all look alike, but in actual fact, they don't. They actually vibrate on a higher frequency, so therefore they're not as physical as Earth humans. Earth humans put a lot into physical appearance, whereas the greys aren't focused there. They're focused on a higher energy frequency. Mm. And it's quite funny you talk about zeta and zeta, because here in Australia we say zeta, and in America they say zeta, but because I do so many interviews with Americans, I'm used to saying zeta, but sometimes I say zeta too.
Well, I think I've seen so many movies where they've referred to zeta reticuli. I think that's kind of how I say it now. Why would the zeta people, the zeta greys, turn you into a human being, which is a crude way of putting it? Why wouldn't they, if they have a message to get to us, why wouldn't they just tell us themselves?
Well, communication is a very, very difficult field there, because the greys communicate telepathically. So when an Earth human's taken up onto the ship, it's very, very hard to get through to them. As a grey, I have a memory of trying to do this with somebody. When a human being is in a state of fear, they wrap a cocoon-like shell around themselves and trying to penetrate that shell to communicate. And the other thing is the communication at that level, because as greys, we work multidimensionally and we think multidimensionally. I mean, the universe is energy vibrating at many, many, many frequencies, multidimensional, a multiverse it could be referred to. So trying to get across concepts to people in at that level, to people like Earth humans who don't have a lot of understanding past third dimensional reality, is extremely difficult. And the other thing is, because the greys look so different, this is part of the reason why people are so scared of them. So as soon as they find themselves on a ship, or they wake up in the middle of the night and there's a grey standing beside their bed, they just absolutely freak out.
Well, look, the greys in popular fiction and in a lot of people's stories have a very bad rap. There's even a song that used to be played on a radio show in America that goes, you may have heard it, if ever I get abducted, please make sure it's not the greys.
No, I haven't heard it.
it's worth it. The old Art Bell shows in the US, they used to play, if ever I get abducted, please let it not be the greys. It's a great song. So the greys have a bad rap. The greys are often seen in many of the things that I've read and heard and people I've spoken with as being the black hats, as if it was a Western. You know, the you have the guy in the white hat and the guy in the black hat and the Westerns. Yeah. The greys are often seen as the bad guys.
Yes, I'm quite aware of that. There's a massive, massive, massive disinformation campaign going on down here, because the greys and the other ETs are trying to help people, and there's a certain...
The other what?
Trying to help people.
No, you said the greys and the other...
And other ETs.
Okay, sorry.
Trying to help people to evolve to a higher level. They work as assistants to human evolution. But there's a group down here, you've probably heard of them, referred to as a cabal, who are trying to stop this happening. They actually hijacked the planet many millennia ago, and they're trying to stop people from evolving.
Whose cabal is this?
Sorry?
Whose cabal is this?
Well, it's a group who actually hijacked the planet many millennia ago, and they've continued to hold humanity in control down here through religion, through governments, through politics. They continue to reincarnate down here.
Is this something to do with the Illuminati?
Yes, exactly. That's another name for them. Archons, Illuminati, the elites. There's several names for them. And the other ETs coming here now since the war are trying to stop this break, this stranglehold they've got. So what the Illuminati are doing, they started this massive disinformation campaign to make people scared of the greys, but they also have quite incredible technology themselves, and they carry out what are called MyLabs. Have you ever heard of MyLabs?
No.
Yeah, okay. It stands for military abductions. And they carry out these fake alien abductions. They've actually created what they call, Stephen Greer talks about them, called PLFs, programmed life forms. And they've actually been manufactured down here to look like the greys. And these things, they're sort of robotic program things, are used in these fake ET abductions.
Right. So why would the Illuminati want to pin it all on the greys?
because the greys are the ones who look least human. And so they demonise them. They're basically demonising them to make them out that they're the ones who are, you know, hurting people and abducting people, where in actual fact it's the Illuminati who are doing this.
Describe to me in appearance what the greys that you're aware of and you say that you descend from look like.
Well, they've evolved out of insectoids, so they have quite an insectoid look to them. The very, very thin face and the huge eyes. Some of them actually have a compound eye structure. Very thin limbs, very fine sort of body, very large head, because they have a much more expanded consciousness, so their brain is way bigger. Very, very classic-looking greys. There are some grey-coloured, some more blue colour. Some of them are very white, light coloured.
I'm going to sound crazy when I say this to some of my listeners, but, you know, it may have been an illusion, let's just say this, but as a 17-year-old, have I ever told this story on here before? I don't think I have. As a 17-year-old, once I was, and, you know, I was not drinking alcohol and I was not imbibing any substances at all when I was 17. I was Mr. Goody Two-Shoes studying for my A-levels here. But I can remember one night looking through my bedroom door and seeing a slim, a cream-coloured creature with very, very long spindly fingers and very spindly limbs and a big head standing by this... this sounds even more ridiculous now, which is why I don't talk about it. Standing by the doorframe, and when it, illusion or whatever it may have been, saw me looking at it, it quickly stepped back as much as to say I've been seen. I mean, I don't think I've ever had the guts to tell that story before, and I know it sounds ridiculous, and I'm perfectly sane, I hope. Does that sound like a familiar description to you?
It certainly does. It certainly does. And good on you for speaking out about it. Well, you'll make a lot of people feel good by saying that, because the more of us who have had these experiences and do speak out makes people feel better about it.
Well, I look, all these years on, from when I was 17, I've never really known whether it was a trick of the light, but my God, it was a pretty clear trick of the light if it was.
Yeah, yes. Yes.
And there are going to be people now saying, oh, God, you were talking about how you saw a ghost, which I definitely did. And now you're telling us this, Howard, are you sure you're all right? But that just happened to me when I was 17, and, you know, I think I'm perfectly well balanced. Okay, here you are, descended from the greys. Can you do any of the things that they can do then in this realm?
Look, when I'm down here in human form, I'm a perfectly normal human. I do energy work. I teach Tai Chi and Qigong, and I also teach Reiki. So I do that sort of work. When I'm up on the ship, it's a different story altogether. I do the sort of work that they do. I actually have memories of working on a male human up on the ship, putting my long grey fingers down inside his head and removing an implant from his head that the Illuminati group had put in. So, yes, I do all that up on the ship.
And who was that person?
Well, I can't name names.
But you know.
But, yes, I know who it was.
And was it somebody from Australia like yourself or somebody from somewhere else?
No, someone from somewhere else.
All right. Okay, so I think we have to try and stick with the chronology, and it's my fault for taking you all over this subject, but I think we need to. So you said something significant happened to you when you were 15, and then something very significant happened to you when you were 30. I'll let you tell the story.
Okay, well at 15 was when I first became aware that, yes, there was really something happening, because I went through the paralysis thing and woke up the next morning with a strong memory of, you know, being with the greys or someone. I didn't know they were greys back then. And my life started being fairly carefully directed after that by them. They led me down sort of certain avenues that I needed to go through. At that point, they actually led me into becoming a professional dancer, which fitted beautifully, because my great-grandmother was a dancer. And the reason why they led me down that avenue was trying to operate an Earth human body as a grey is not easy. And so by learning to be a professional dancer, it helped me to learn to operate the body more easily. It also got me used to getting up in front of people performing, which is a great advantage doing interviews like this, to be able to get up and speak. It doesn't worry me, whereas a lot of people would hate speaking in public. This went on for quite some years. I was very, very caught up in my physical life as a dancer. Got married. We moved out onto an acreage property. And one day in early 1983, when I was 30 years old, I just turned 30, I started feeling a little bit off colour. In the afternoon, my husband's family were over visiting. And
Can I just ask, before we get to the story of when you were 30, you got married, so you have a husband. What did your husband make of this?
He's very, very good about it. He has actually seen me shapeshift a couple of times, so he knows that what I'm saying is real. He's not desperately interested in it, but he's extremely open about it and doesn't have a problem with it at all. He's very supportive.
Wow, well, that's very, very broad-minded of him. I guess I think there would be some people who would probably be on the nearest bus heading somewhere else if their partner told them this.
Yes, but again, you know, it's all planned before we even come here. Everyone makes these pre-birth plans, and when we know I've got a job to do, we're very selective about family and partners, etc.
Okay, yeah, I interrupted you, and I'm sorry. You were telling me what happened when you were 30.
Yeah, right. Yes, in the middle of the day, so my husband's family were over. We were on acreage property, so there was always a lot of work to do outside. And I started coming down, feeling like I was coming down with the flu, and I made an excuse and went upstairs to a quiet bedroom at the back of the house. It was a two-story house with the bedrooms upstairs. And I lay down, and this familiar that I had when I was 15, paralysis feeling came over me. I lay on the bed, couldn't move. Loud, roaring, sort of buzzing sound in my head, and I started getting really, really scared because I didn't know what was happening. And the next thing, I became aware of three of the greys standing beside the bed, and they were so solid, they were blocking out light from the window to the left-hand side of me. And immediately I saw them, I recognised them as family. And my fear completely disappeared. I've never had it since. And during that afternoon, there was missing time involved because I was taken off and they talked to me, they explained to me, they reminded me of who I was, how I was connected to them, that, you know, I'm a grey and they're my family from up there, and that I'd made this decision to come down here on this mission to help people with their ET experiences and to help Earth humans to understand more about energy. And they advised me, they said, you'll be moving back to the city because you've hidden yourself out here for long enough, you've got to get back to work. And they told me I needed to learn to meditate to make communication easier, and I needed to learn Tai Chi because being a professional dancer, trying to learn to meditate wasn't going to be easy. And I didn't even know what Tai Chi was when they told me. And they also said I'd be learning a natural healing modality. So anyway, over the next 3 years, circumstances changed. We did move back to the city. Within a week of moving back, I found a Tai Chi class around the corner, which I attended and was absolutely blown away to find out that it meant it's also referred to as moving meditation. New people came into the rental property next door to us. The woman had been meditating for 10 years. Her teacher had just moved up from Tasmania, was starting a class close by us. And so it's one thing after another. It was just amazing the coincidences that came to pass in those few years. So I sat in the meditation circle for 8 years and learned automatic writing while I was there.
I was just reading that in your biography. Automatic writing is something that psychics claim to do.
Yes, yes. And this was how the Greys ended up sending the books through automatic writing. I sort of put myself into a slightly altered state and the information's fed through. I also became a Tai Chi instructor. I trained for several years there. I trained for 6 years to become a Reiki master, which I'm doing. So through these modalities, I'm able to, as an Earth human, relate to other Earth humans and teach them about the energy system of the body, and you know, how to work with energy consciously, etc. So, you know, it's been wonderful to have this these tools down here to work with to help others.
But you also believe that you have a bigger job to do, yeah?
Oh, absolutely, for sure. Through learning to meditate, I've been able to remember more of my experiences. The experience that I had in 1983, there was a massive download of information given to me, so I came to understand much more clearly what I'm doing here, why I'm here, etc. So,
what is your mission statement?
My mission statement, it's to help people to get past their fear. That's the main thing I'm doing down here.
Their fear of the greys, their fear of what?
Yeah, the fear of contact with ETs, which is a massive thing for many, many people.
But wouldn't ETs help themselves, and have you ever asked them about this, if they simply came out and addressed people publicly?
Well, for a start, they get shot down, which has happened. Many ships have been shot down. It would cause absolute mass panic, I can guarantee that. I know a number of people who are in this field say, oh, why don't they just come and land on the lawn at the White House? People have no idea that the majority of people on planet Earth would just absolutely freak out. All it would do would cause mass panic. People would be hurt. People would probably be hurt emotionally. That's not the way they work. They're coming in the back door more, making it a more gentle experience, working through people like myself, so that if ever the time does come when disclosure happens, there'll be people like me and many, many others who can be the ones to guide others through the whole process.
The greatest problem that you have, though, isn't it, is the problem of proof. People are always asking for proof, and one of the things that is often said, and I think it is quite valid to say it, is that if you've been having this regular contact, been going on ships, it would have been nice if they'd given you, or if you'd taken something from the ship or from them to bring back and say, I'm not deluded, I'm not lying, I'm not, I don't have mental disturbance. Here is a communicator that they use, or here is what they use to write, or here is whatever. And this is your definitive proof, but you don't have that, do you?
Well, apparently Philip Corso, who back engineered the Roswell ships, had quite a few things like that.
Okay, you don't have anything like that, no?
No, I don't. But I'll tell you what happened with me. It's very hard to bring anything from up there because, again, it's different dimensional frequencies. This is what's really hard to get people's heads around. The dimensional frequencies are different. It's not a physical thing as we know physicality. What did happen that one night up there, I was actually working with a couple of the little greys teaching them how to use what they call laser cutters. It's like I think they use them in medicine down here. It's like a laser scalpel type thing. And they were practicing on my leg. And my body was on the table and I was standing behind the body or floating or whatever, because I was out of body, guiding them through this process. And they sealed the wound by cauterizing it. Anyway, the next morning I woke up with a vague memory of being up there and doing something, but I couldn't remember exactly what. But that day we were going to the beach. And I went to put suntan lotion on my legs and I found this massive, long, perfectly straight cut with blisters all along it, right around the bottom part of my right leg. And, of course, when I saw it, all the memory flooded back of what we'd been doing up on the ship that night.
And did you take that to a doctor to look at?
Well, no, I didn't, because you just don't bother, you know. I mean, by the time I would have got to a doctor, it was healed. It healed so quickly. And this was back in the days where there weren't camera phones, so I couldn't get a picture of it. I didn't own a camera. So I kicked myself to this very day that I didn't do something.
And you're absolutely sure you didn't fall out of bed or bang the door or, you know, all those things that we do. I mean, coming into my apartment this morning, I went and closed my finger in the front door, stupidly picking up the mail. You know, those sorts of things happen.
No, there was a perfectly straight cut around halfway around my lower leg, and it was cauterized with little blisters. It healed very quickly, but I did have a scar there for quite a while after. But the funny thing is my GP that I go to, she's actually read my first two books, The Zeta Message and Human by Day, Zeta by Night.
Right, so your
And
doctor has seen your work.
my
Okay.
doctor, yes, and she's completely open to it. One day after I'd been to see her, there weren't many people waiting, and she wanted to talk, and she said, "How do you manage being down here as an ET?" Couldn't knock me over the feather. I got such a shock. But no, she's very, very open to it.
Okay, and she's clearly she doesn't think you need any form of treatment.
No way, no. She always comments on how very grounded I am and
Okay.
very healthy because of all the Tai Chi and Reiki I do.
You talk in this biography that I've got here, this media pack that is put together, about something that happened here in the UK about 23 years ago.
Oh yes, that was fascinating. Yes, we were over in the UK for a family reunion, and we went to the Rollright Stones. Are you familiar with the Rollright Stones?
No, I should be. Where are they?
Yes, it's a sacred circle on the Oxfordshire Warwickshire border.
I've probably seen it, I just didn't know that's what they were called. I know that area very well.
Yeah, so the circle is called the King's Men, and then there's the Knights or something they're called, and
Yeah,
then
I
there's
think
a
I saw these. I was driving up the back route up towards the northwest where my dad lived, and I actually drove from Reading, Berkshire, and I went up that way, and I'm sure I saw them. They're on your left as you drive north, I think.
Yes. They're actually bordering. There's part of them is on the Warwickshire
Yeah.
side, and parts on the Oxfordshire side. There's the Kingstone is like a huge monolith or menhir, I think they call it, overlooking the village of Little Rollright, I think it's called.
Right.
And the King's Men is on the other side. We visited there in 1995. Happened to be there on the day of the summer solstice. And I happened, just absolute coincidence, happened to be standing in the middle of the circle at 12 noon. And speaking to the caretaker, he had some amazing information to give us, about this fog that gathers right in the centre of the circle, etc., and not outside it. And I could feel the difference stepping in and out of the circle. I could feel the difference in energy. Anyway, about 3 weeks later, when I got back here to Australia, I had been feeling a bit weird. Ever since I got home, and I thought, oh, it's jet lag or something, I didn't put it down to anything. And then one night, I was actually taken out of my body in astral form and taken back to the circle. I was laid down right in the centre, held down by a group of the little greys, and a long needle with a blue crystal was put into my third eye. Hurt like anything. I struggled and yelled, pull it out, ouch, ouch, it's hurting.
God, well, I'm feeling the pain for you now.
And then I blanked out. Anyway, the next morning I woke up with a real clear memory of this dream. Well, oh, no, it's just a dream. So anyway, I looked in the mirror and checked, and sure enough, there was this tiny little crescent-shaped mark right on my third eye, red mark where the needle had gone in. And during that time, again, there was missing time. And again, there was a massive download of information, and it was during that meeting with them when I was told that I needed to start writing books because people were having trouble with communication with the greys, and would I write a book talking about ET human contact, but from the ET's perspective? And this needle that was put into my third eye was like an acupuncture type process, and it was to do with this download of information into my energy body.
Now, this is something that doesn't really compute with me because if they are so sophisticated and they work on such a vibrational level above us, why do they keep doing things forcibly to you? That's not very democratic, is it?
Well, because I'm operating on two levels. On one level, I would have been fine with it, but I wanted to remember something the next morning, and so the pain of it was given to me, which caused me to remember. I mean, if I just gone off and blanked out as I could have done, I wouldn't have remembered. Whereas the pain brought a memory back to me. It's sort of like it shocks the system and so, oh, yes, of course that happened. It's more, I really think in some cases that we do it to ourselves or create the situation so that we will remember. Because, I mean, I'm ever grateful that they did it. If I had to do it again 10 times over, I would, because the information that's come through has been just amazing, as people will know.
Well, give me a snapshot of the information then. What's it saying?
Well, for example, so much information came in. It's very hard to encapsulate because so much information came through. One book turned into two. But they teach that one of the things, main things they've taught us about the concept of oneness. We're all one, Earth humans, Zetas, Pleiadians. We all share the same stream of consciousness or universal life force energy. There's no them and us. In the greater reality, we're all one. They're trying to wake us up to the fact that we're all immortal souls. We're part of God or Source or Oneness. We're not just a physical body of flesh and blood. The physical body is just a vehicle, a container for the spirit or the soul through which it can experience physicality.
So you believe that when you cease to be here, as we all will, you're going to be going on to something else?
Oh, absolutely, for sure. I mean, you know, if... Those of us who have lucid dreams are very, very aware of leaving the physical body at night. The physical body is just like a car. We're the driver. We're not our body. This is one of the main things the ETs are trying to get across. We're not our body. And again, you've only got to read books by Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross to see the huge amount of work that's been done on what they call NDEs, near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences. Again, there's millions of people who've been through this, so it's very well documented.
Did you and your husband have children, Judy?
No, we don't.
Okay.
That was one of the things that I would have had trouble with being a grey down here in human form.
Okay, so there are physiological reasons why you I mean, if it's difficult for you, I don't want to go there, of course not, but you say there are physiological reasons why you can't.
Not physiological, no, more psychological. I couldn't have handled it.
Okay. Right, because you in within you, you believe that you are not as you appear.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a story. Have you never been tempted, so that you can counter all of the naysaying that you're bound to get, as well as all of those positive emails, have you never been tempted to do, hypnotic regression or get some mental profiling done just to say, well, look, here I am, I'm perfectly grounded, and there is nothing else going on with me, nothing physical, nothing mental, that would create this. So it has to be what I say it is.
No, I haven't, because, I mean, I know that it is happening. I don't have a problem with it. I would worry if there weren't all these other people going through it. If it was only me, then, yeah, I'd just put it down. Oh, I must have something wrong with my mind or something. You know, I'd put it down to that. But there are so many tens of thousands of people going through it. I have done the survey with the free organisation in America, which was very interesting. There's so many people going through it. I've never been tempted to do that. And in fact, it's interesting because the free organisation won't accept testimonies from people who've had their experiences come through hypnosis, because in hypnosis, the astral mind sort of, or subconscious, gets in the way and can distort them. They'll only take testimonies from people who actually have conscious recall, like I do.
Now, as we draw this to a close, Judy, and thank you for doing this, we're at opposite ends of the day. I'm up here in the north and you're down there in the south, depending on which way you look. I suppose from space it doesn't really matter, but you know what I'm saying. As we bring this to a close, crucially, you say that the contact that you've had is ongoing. Is that so?
Yes, that's right.
When was the last contact?
I'm up there just about every night. I was doing something up there last night. I was doing some healing work. It's ongoing all the time.
And you were, in a spaceship flying over Earth?
Yes, we're doing some work. We're doing DNA work on people to activate more DNA work in people.
Why is that?
To enable the humans to evolve to a higher level. This is what's holding them back. Expansion of conscious awareness is linked into activation of more DNA. So this is the main reason why we're doing this work.
And if that DNA gets activated, does it mean we'll behave better to each other? We'll be more understanding?
Hopefully. Hopefully. Hmm.
And all the reports that we've had over the years, I mean, I get them sent to me. People sending me pictures and, you know, giving me reports of various things. When people talk of UFOs that they've seen and huge craft appearing over military bases and all that kind of thing, can you shed a little light on what they may be?
Well, a lot of them actually are from down here. A lot of them are put out by the MyLab group because they're actually making ships down here. They back-engineered the ships that crashed in America, and they've created their own. So a lot of ships people are seeing are just from down here, manufactured by the military. The ETs are putting in appearances just to start acclimatizing people to the fact that they're here. And some people who have, you know, contacts with them do see real ships, but a lot of the ones that are seen, particularly around military bases, are not real UFOs. They're from right down here. Look, if people want to really go into this, my latest book that I've just had released, Extraterrestrial Presence on Earth, Lessons in History, I go right into the history of ET contact on Earth, where things went wrong. The planet was hijacked millennia ago by this group that we refer to as the Illuminati. I talk about how they're still controlling people through religion, politics, etc. What's happening, the fake ET abductions that are happening, all the hybrids, so much information has been packed into this book, and also ideas on how people need to start thinking to get themselves out of this mess that the planet's in. Tried to give some suggestions down there and where Earth science needs to go to help the planet.
Now, you mentioned hybrids. Are you a hybrid?
I don't tend to think of myself that way. I think of myself more on a blended soul level. I like to think of it more on the soul level. At the same time, I probably do have ET DNA in me. Again, I've never had it tested. I wouldn't like to, because if something anomaly shows up, then you end up being put into a laboratory and, you know, dissected just about. So I wouldn't like to go down that path.
Now, I get a lot of mail on this show, and I'm grateful for all of it. And often, when I talk to people who've had experiences like yours, I don't think I've ever spoken to anybody who's had precisely this experience before. The mail that I get tends to break down into a couple of forms. There are people who say, thank goodness you put somebody on who's brave enough to talk about this, and thank you for being brave enough to discuss it on your show. And then there are people who will say, this person is clearly wacko, and we question you, that's me, for putting this person on. Thinking of the latter category of emails, which I know I'm probably going to get, what would you say to those people?
Well, everyone's entitled to their opinion. I mean, you know, it's not our job here to change people's minds. All I would say would be for them to do their research. If they do their research, they'll see that there's far more of this going on. It's not just me or just, you know, Susie Hansen or just somebody else. There are thousands upon thousands of people going through these experiences. There are also, if you go online, you can read about missile sites that have been closed down, missiles turned off in heavily, heavily guarded facilities. So, you know, there's a lot of evidence out there, but, I mean, if the person has to have the interest to look. I mean, I've come across people talking about ghosts, and I say, you know, oh, do you believe in ghosts? And they'll say, no, I don't believe in ghosts. And I say, well, have you ever read anything up about it? Oh, no, I'm not interested. No, I don't bother reading. I mean, this is the thing. A lot of people just close down as skeptics. I don't mind skepticism. Skepticism, great, as long as they're open-minded skeptics. But when they're closed-minded skeptics, you're only wasting your energy speaking to
them. I'd like to think that I'm an open-minded skeptic in my approach to this.
You must be, Howard, to be able to run a program like this. Well, you obviously are.
Yeah, I think you have to be reasonably sceptical but not cynical in these things. You mentioned that, as I've reported on this show many times before, these claims that ET shut down military bases and missile silos, are they your people who've done that?
Oh, there's a whole lot of ETs down here doing this sort of work. It's not just the Greys. There are a number of different ones who are down here. We're all working together on the project.
Okay, well, good luck with the new book, Judy. Thank you very much for doing this, and maybe we can catch up in the future at some point. It is a hard path in life that you go down, but it seems to me that you don't see it that way.
I don't, Howard. No, I mean, you know, we all plan our lives beforehand, and everything that happens in life is a learning experience. You know, nothing happens by accident. Even the most awful things, there's always learning in them for yourself or for somebody around you. So the best thing you can do, and a really important thing that the ETs always emphasise, is to approach life in a positive rather than a negative way. You know, try and think positively rather than negatively. That's something really important, because as quantum physics is proving, we create our own reality through the way we think. So surely we want to create a positive rather than a negative world for ourselves.
Is the Zeta Grey view that we are going to have to ultimately go off planet and go somewhere else to live because of what we've done to this planet?
Well, if we do, if the worst comes to the worst and we do blow this planet up, a large part of the work that the ETs are carrying out is collecting DNA from humans. And this is why their work seems to carry on over families, you know, through families, I mean, because that way human life will be preserved to be shifted somewhere else.
So if we are stupid enough to wreck it all, and, you know, all bets are off about that, they will be the ones who are rebuilding us.
Yes, they are. They are. And this is why it's so important that people not be scared and, you know, not get angry that it's happening. It could be the saving grace of the planet.
Did they bring us here in the first place?
Yes, they did.
From Mars or where?
No. DNA was brought from all over the universe. Evolution is actually a two-pronged thing. It's physical, as Darwin speaks about it, but it's also intelligent design as well, with what we refer to as creator beings coming here, assisting the process.
Fascinating and, as you will be aware, controversial story, but thank you for telling it to me. And, you know, it is amazing that we can communicate all these thousands of miles apart, you in Brisbane and me up here in rainy London today. Judy, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much for having me, Howard. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, I know that will have been controversial. Your thoughts on Judy Carroll? Welcome, of course. My website, theunexplained.tv. Follow the link and you can send me a message from there. If you'd like to make a donation to this show to allow it to continue, that would be great too, because this is not one of those subscription shows. It is a donation show. So if you can, that would be fantastic. Of course, if you can't, then just enjoy the shows. But, you know, I've tried to keep it a free show for many years. It has been a struggle. But that's the way that we've done it. And I know that some subscription shows build up massive cash surpluses, and that's the way that they operate. I can tell you that I'm completely at the other end of the scale. But if you can make a donation, terrific. Judy Carroll's work I will link to on the website, theunexplained.tv. And we'll have more great and sometimes controversial guests in the pipeline here at The Unexplained. So until next we meet, my name is Howard Hughes. I am in London. And please, wherever you are, stay safe, stay calm, and above all, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.